I think the significance today is because of the work that we do on the ground, working with young people between the ages of 12 and 24. Many of the young people that we work with are people that are coming from backgrounds that are really affected by violence, either direct interpersonal experiences of violence or structural violence caused by racism and poverty.
What are the specificities of Gandhi's thought on nonviolence which make it still significant in today's world?
I was born in 1962, and there are more than twice as many people on this planet as there were then. Between the number of us that are here now and the ways in which our economies are connected to each other, our cultures are connected, we don't have the luxury of withdrawing into our different parts of the world from each other. We are in relationship to each other in ways that are very significant. If any one part of the world begins to collapse, other parts would as well. So I think that the notion of Gandhi's ideas of principled nonviolence, meaning that we need to think about nonviolence as an internal and an interpersonal practice, as well as a political one, are more relevant now than they were then.
Could you please explain what is your experience in diffusing the philosophy of Gandhi, nonviolence, and peacemaking?
My experience relates to this very homely thing that happened to me many years ago, which is that I became a mom. And I wanted to stay home with my daughter, our third child, when they were born. And what was interesting about it was that when I started staying home with my children, I was terrible at it, partly because I was trained by society to be focused on goals and outcomes. And anyone who spent time with little children knows that they don't care less about those things. I mean, they're very focused on now, the present moment. The problem with that was that I was raised in a home with some physical violence and verbal violence, and all that conditioning was in me waiting. It was very painful when I started staying home with my children. I was really bad at it. And I began to think that maybe I needed to, frankly, go back to work and let my children be raised by a kinder and more gentler person than myself. I knew that I would regret that. So I decided instead to try to retool my personality from scratch. And that's how I got involved with nonviolence. I've been doing many things to enact nonviolence. So I have had many opportunities over the years to try to enact nonviolence with hundreds of other people. I'm very lucky.
During your intervention, you talked about peer-to-peer education among youth, the priority of education to nonviolence for youth in low-income settings, the ability to convert violent people to nonviolence. Are there specific episodes that you want to share?
We've had the opportunity, and I really want to thank our partners in the Rochester City School District for the public schools there that have allowed us to really become engaged with and experiment with and many of these ideas with young people. We have, over the years, had just wonderful experiences with kids who had deep troubles and afterwards would come to us and tell us how much it meant that they knew that we cared about them, that they were able now to relate to, you know, their families in a different way, their friends in a different way. Most recently, a group of young people that came into a space dedicated for conflict resolution, and the adult there said, okay, what do you guys need help with? And they said, we don't need your help. We just need the space. We know how to do this now. There's no question in my mind that it's a very empowering thing for young people, especially young people who have been affected by violence, to know how to work things out for themselves. It's not sexy or fun for them to. All of them have lost people to violence. So many of them can actually be very, very powerful spokespeople for violence prevention work. And I think that that's a very exciting and important thing to think about. I think youth employment of all kinds can be used for peace building and peacekeeping in societies. And why not? Why not let the youth lead?
You conclude in saying, we are built for peace, but we are trained for violence. Could you please explain what do you mean with this message?
I said we are built for peace because our bodies tell us how we feel. When we're in a setting where we're afraid or tense, our hearts beat, our palms sweat, our brain doesn't think as well, our creativity gets diminished, our habit energy comes stronger. When we're afraid, we're not at our full and best self. When we're not afraid, when we're happy or feel just safe with other people, our bodies tell us a different story. We feel good. We feel relaxed, like I do with you right now speaking. So I think our bodies teach us about peace all the time. We know when we feel good, and we can let our bodies tell us what are the ways in which we can try to create a society where all of us can feel that way more often.
Is there something further you wish to tell to our audience?
I think it's easy right now to get overwhelmed and hopeless about the state of the world. One of my favorite Gandhi quotes is, he said, "Everything you do may feel insignificant, but it's important that you do it anyway." I want everyone here to realize that every small act that you make, and all the small acts that you make, by the way, build habits that can encourage you to become bolder and braver later in life than you might ever imagine. I didn't start out being able to speak in front of the United Nations. It's been a long but beautiful journey of trying to build my own courage and capacity in this work. So I want to just encourage all of you, no matter how old you are, what your background is, to just keep taking those next steps and trust that you are doing something that life itself wants us to do.